We even have samples that have been sliced and diced that we pass around typically. So
I was like watching them get sliced and diced. Is this like Jurassic Park?
Hello and welcome to the Daktronics Experience Podcast. I'm Justin Oxner here with Matt Anderson. Today, Shannon Mutchelkenhaus joins us again. He's the engineering manager of Daktronics Laboratory Services Group. Today, we're going to talk about qualification testing after components have been selected, things they test for, and a few things they get to slice and dice in the lab. And we're here with Shannon again. Shannon, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys.
Good, good. So last time you were on the podcast with us, we talked about lab services and we talked about the developmental testing before we're making project or products, and we're looking at certain types of components and different things to see if they're worthy to be put on our products. And today we're going to talk about something a little bit different, and that's the next step. Can you explain that next step for us a little bit?
Yeah, right. So now we're later in the development process or the product life cycle, and we figured out what parts we're using. Now we're getting close to commercialization, to releasing those products to the customer. We go through a stage of testing that we call qualification testing. And qualification testing is really kind of the last check before we go into mass production.
Okay.
So we're getting what we call pre-production samples before they're released, but they're really the final design. They're what we expect the customer to see. So they're both, they're the design, and they're also the final manufacturing process. So they're built not in a laboratory, not in some shop. They're built on the production line with the real manufacturing processes.
So it's the real deal. It's coming through now.
That's right, right. It's getting more serious. And so during qualification testing, we do really the final checks on the product to make sure that it meets all the requirements, make sure it meets what things you see on the specification sheets, make sure that it passes all the certifications from third-party labs. Those parts will get shipped out to third-party labs for final certification for things that we're not certified to do in-house.
Thinking back to the first time you were on, and we talked about how you get a lot of different materials that get tested. Some work, some don't. You get a lot of different options and variances for what to use. So when you're at this step, do you have any variances, or is it say like now it's this one product we've decided on all the materials for it, here it is, or do you still have like an A and a B kind of test?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'll say it's not always the same answer, but a lot of times narrowed down to one option. But sometimes we'll have product that we release with multiple options to meet specialized customer needs. So then we'll do qualification testing on both of those configurations. One good example might be with LEDs. So we might release a product with two different types of LEDs available for special applications, maybe a high brightness or something like that where we have a variation.
So they're both on the same platform, so to speak, the same kind of engineering drawings, just a different component here to see if this component's better for this customer's use or this component's better for a different customer use.
Right, exactly. Now, sometimes we will have other options that aren't maybe going to make it into the end product. And that's only under situations where we maybe don't have as much confidence that that the best or the one that we really want can make it on there. But we'll have what we call a safety set.
Okay.
That we might be testing. So if this one that's maybe we're stretching to make it way better, maybe that doesn't pan out, we still have a safety set available so we can be successful in the product launch.
So you're not starting over from scratch, essentially. It's back with everything we covered in the previous episode.
Yeah, right, right.
So when you're going through these tests now for qualification testing, what are some different ones that you do at this step versus the other ones that we had mentioned?
Yeah, so at this step, we do more of a full gamut. It's not focused on just what the designers need to know to make design decisions. It's looking at the whole product. So some examples that we do third-party certification on would be EMI. We did EMI measurements during development in our facility here to help us make design decisions. But for qualification, we need the certificate by a third party that, you know, it helps show that we didn't fake the results, we didn't do any of this stuff incorrectly internally. It's another third party doing the same test we did to verify that we did it right. That another test that we do is with UL, the Underwriters Laboratory. They do a lot of our safety certification. So they go through the design, they verify there's nothing there that's unsafe, anything that could potentially cause a fire or get too hot. or injure anybody. But the big thing that is really important is fire, because that's bad.
And I want to jump back really quick. You did say EMI, and that's electromagnetic interference. Just really quick touch on that.
Yeah.
So we're not throwing out too many acronyms without a little bit of definition to those. But yeah, that's what we mean when we're talking EMI.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for pulling me back to that. So EMI stands for electromagnetic interference. And this is really something that every piece of electronics emits electromagnetic radiation. And it's possible that that electromagnetic radiation exceeds radiation levels that will interfere with other devices. So it can cause your cell phone to not work properly, to not communicate. It could be your wireless microphones. It could be Wi-Fi signals. Any sort of electromagnetic communications are really susceptible to interference. And if our product, especially because it's so huge, it's really easy to design it not good enough that it's going to cause interference.
And those are some of the more technical things. But at this stage, I'm picturing like a full module submerged in water or with water spraying on it. Is that the right level of this testing?
Yeah, yep. So that's where this type of testing will happen. So we do those water immersion tests. But maybe a little less known is that we apply a lot of different stresses to those mods before we do that. A lot of our competitors, even in the marketplace, it's IP67 rated, right? So it's ingress protection 67, which is a pretty high level. I mean, you could submerge it in water. And that's great that it can do that on day one. But our customers really expect that to still do that on year 7 and 8 because they're still using their displays outdoors. So we'll apply humidity and temperature cycling stresses to age the parts, and then we'll verify that they are staying sealed so that for the duration of the lifetime, it will work.
And you mentioned humidity there too. And is that where the salt fog chamber would come in as well?
Sometimes humidity alone usually doesn't entail salt, but salt fog will happen at that stage to verify that we don't have too much corrosion.
Are there any other cool machines that you're using at this stage that I'm not remembering right now?
We have all kinds of acronyms. One of the bigger ones and cooler ones to see if you come on a tour is what we call the IQMS. It's the Image Quality Measurement System.
Wow. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, so this is in the dark room in the back corner of the lab. When you walk into the room, it's kind of like walking into a movie theater because we have to really control the light in this area.
IQMS?
Image Quality Measurement System.
Okay. Sometimes I need to hear it twice, Justin, so I remember it.
I'm not surprised to hear that.
Yeah, so this tool measures really the key performance parameters that people care about with a display. It measures how bright it is. It measures what the maximum viewing angles are. It measures your color gamut, which is the range of colors that the display can produce, and all of those things that matter to make the display look the best, crispest display that you can get.
And you have to do that. You said like it's in a back dark room. Is that just because that helps get the most accurate measurements? Is kind of why everything kind of has to be controlled that way?
Yep. So we don't have any interference of ambient lighting influencing the measurement.
So those are a lot of different tests that we're doing at this point. What happens if you find a failure at this point? This is after we've tested the components and decided to make the product. So at this point, it's got to be a little bit different if something mm-hmm. happens, right?
Yeah. So when products don't pass this testing, the process is a little more escalated. And we actually have a formalized process that corrective action will go through. The process we use is called 8D. Or that stands for 8 disciplines. And there's really 8 steps that the product or the problem-solving process will have to go through to verify that we get that solved. And we also record and track that. Whereas failures maybe during development, they don't get that kind of rigor because you want them to fail. You're trying to just differentiate between this and that. If you don't meet targets at this stage, you want to get that corrected, and you also want to have a clear plan and prove that you got that corrected.
When you come into, I'd say, any issue, whether it's minor or big, you know, at this stage, and this may be a question where it's hard to define, but how much time does it take then to go back? Because this is a product, you know, that's been vetted through fairly good, you know, through a lot of different things, all these different tests. I mean, when you go back, are the development designers and everyone pretty upset if you find one of these things because now they got to go back and redo everything?
Yeah. I think everybody's maybe disappointed when that happens, but it's also one of the situations where we consider failure as success. The fact that we detected it is really good news, because that still means we can prevent it from occurring in the field.
I was going to say, because that's one of the biggest reasons for doing a lot of this testing, right, is doing it here before it gets out in the field, just because it's obviously, even before it's in use from a customer, but installation, testing, just saves a lot of work and headaches if you can detect all that stuff back here at home base.
I'm sure our service team probably appreciates it getting caught way before there's that bigger installation, so it's not even out in the field at all.
They do like that. Hopefully, they don't even know.
Right.
So everyone gets an email from you from a design standpoint, do they get upset when they see your name come in then? Because it's just like, oh, shoot, he found something. But is there a difference between maybe a failure that was detected and like it can't go on anymore, or, you know, you stressed it to such a high level that we wouldn't think it would happen in the field? Like, is there any variances amongst these failures that you detect?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's actually is an important part of the problem-solving process. So sometimes we'll detect things that maybe aren't realistic. And so as part of the problem-solving, as part of the 8D process, we have to analyze that and verify. So after the parts maybe fail in test, if something breaks or something doesn't meet the specifications, we have a whole failure analysis facility and laboratory that if you come visit us, you get to see, where we can dice and slice parts, look inside, and understand really what the root cause was to that failure.
Slice and dice. So you actually cut them up and find out what happened to them.
Literally slice and dice.
Nice. That sounds fun.
This is on part of a tour. You can see this?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And we even have samples that have been sliced and diced that we pass around typically. So
I was like watching them get sliced and diced. Is this like Jurassic Park where they just start going on that tour and they see all the, you know what I'm talking about, in the laboratory things? Like, do people watch through a glass as you're taking apart these modules and figuring out what's wrong?
That's right, except there's no blood.
No blood. That's good to know.
But I just think, like, you're on a tour and seeing them, you know, whether it's just taking apart a module or everything. So it's, and this can also be when you get things back in from the field, right? Does this, the qualification testing that we're talking about today still apply to things after they've been out in the field and they'll come back? Because I know last episode we kind of talked a little bit about when a new product's being developed, but still being able to help out when issues are detected out in the field.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We really call that failure analysis, right? So we have a whole nother process for field returns. If there's situations in the field where things aren't working properly, or even just regular monitoring, we'll get samples back that we check to verify various performance parameters.
I'd have to imagine a big advantage to that then, of this all being kind of handled by the same group, is that if something did get out in the field, had a failure, then you look back to say, you know, well, how do we miss it, or what can we do the next time these go out and test so that even that gets cut down further the next time?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm sure that the lab's up and running all the time. There's constantly something going on. Just curious, how many different things could you even ballpark that you're testing on any given day?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. I would say it's definitely in the hundreds.
Okay, yeah. A little bit of a curveball there, but yeah, I just thought of that while we're sitting here talking about parts coming back from in the field, even the stuff we talked about last episode with all the different components, and then even what we're talking about in this one with the qualification testing. It seems like there's got to be a lot going on, and you've got to have a lot of different machines working to keep up with everything that's being tested.
Yep, that's right, and managing that's complex, and we use some software tools to help us track different projects and plan our work and so on.
You mentioned, I still had a kind of a question in my head back when you were talking about even EMI, right? So we do our own testing of it here, component level, maybe even to the module level, but then we'll still send it off to get verified because we can't do that part here, right? So is it, what kind of, I think I know it's a big chamber that we have, but it's essentially to help minimize the amount of back and forth once we send it off to get licensed, right? Because it doesn't mean anything maybe until it gets that license, but testing it here maybe cuts down on the revisions or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we can test various iterations and options here, we can know that it's going to pass before we send it out. So if we wait and send it out to see what if it meets the requirements or not. Then they got to send it back. And sometimes it might be really small changes, like adding this little ferrite or changing some capacitors. If their engineer was there, he could make that change in a matter of minutes. So this way, we can move through our design cycles way faster because we can iterate and make improvements. And it's also really helpful for the engineers because they get to see the impact of their design decisions almost instantly.
Yeah, nice. That's something I hadn't thought of, is how quick the engineers can see what's going on and how fast you can really move through the process of designing and testing products and making adjustments just really quickly with immediate feedback almost.
Yep.
But I think we really touched something interesting with that slicing and dicing and people being able to actually see that on a tour. I mean, without the blood, of course. But if somebody wanted to come through and take a tour, we do have tours for certain groups. And if they wanted to reach out for a tour, exactly how do you think they would do that again?
Yeah, if you are interested in a tour, go ahead and call our phone number. We have that available on our website. You'll get a hold of our front desk personnel, and they can schedule a tour for whatever works for you.
For record, the slicing and dicing part I was referring to, Justin, was Jurassic Park where the eggs are being hatched. There was no blood in there. They just watched the baby raptors come out of the eggs. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't want to know what you're talking about. I might know what you're talking about right now, but I'm not going to admit that.
I just meant there's no blood, so I didn't mean anything by that.
This brings up a good thing that we need to add to our tours. We probably should bring some dinosaur bones in.
We're testing dinosaur bones in our lab now, unofficially.
That's right. It is unofficial, but we have.
See, Justin, my stretch of an analogy just helped.
So we've touched on quite a few different things that you actually test, like from brightness to EMI to some safety things even. Are there any other things specifically that we test for that is big for our customers?
Yeah, you know, some of the most important things, I'd say the primary function of our displays, so image quality.
Right.
So you know, that's one of the things that LED displays can do better than any other technology, is give you really superior outdoor ambient contrast ratios that you just can't achieve with LCD or any of those other legacy technologies.
I think it's important, image quality, and that goes across any of our markets here at Daktronics, right? Whether it's a billboard on the side of the street or even just live video for a sporting event, being able to make sure all that looks exactly how it's supposed to. And I know color reproduction, I don't know if it gets into that a little bit, but we always say, you know, a school has a certain orange or red that is their color, and then being able to replicate that and make sure that it looks that way on display is very important.
Yep, that's absolutely right. So we measure all that stuff on a new product and make sure that it has a very wide color gamut so it can meet any of the display needs of our customers. We even take that to the next level where we do reliability testing to see how long it will maintain that color gamut over the product's life.
Is it safe to say that, you know, the image quality, how good it is I'm trying to think like a summation of all these other tests, right? So obviously if a display goes out or a module goes out, that's different. You guys test for that, but that doesn't affect, let's say, image quality. It's like, it's just, there's no image there, it went out. Versus, you know, your brightness testing, make sure the contrast ratio is good, viewing angle is good. Like all those things are what actually contribute to, I'd say, like image quality, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And uniformity, that's another really good one. As you know, every pixel we can calibrate and make them very uniform. That's something that you can't do with LCD and a lot of those other technologies. You can't calibrate at the pixel level.
Right. That's what I was just thinking, was the calibration. Sometimes there's field calibration after it's installed, but if you can test if it's going to be able to be calibrated in the lab and get to that pixel level, like you said, that's got to be a great benefit.
Yep.
Well, no, even making sure that it's consistent across the board, especially if something goes wrong and you do swap out modules, if it's been out in the field for a couple of years, you want to make sure that the new module, whatever, doesn't all of a sudden stick out. And then pretty soon you got, like, it looks like a quilt right up there of all these different squares that have different levels of brightness and everything. So calibration obviously being very important.
Absolutely.
You agree, Justin?
I concur. So we've touched on quite a few different things, and I'm sure we can dive deeper into some of these things, possibly EMI, in another podcast later on. But thanks for coming back in again and talking with us again today.
Thank you, guys. It was great to be on. And I'll come up with a photo so we can post an authentic South Dakota dinosaur bone sliced and diced.
There we go. Thanks,
Sliced and diced in the Daktronics Reliability Lab.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Daktronics Experience Podcast. For more information, visit www.daktronics.com.